We are on a video call, and guys, your hair looks fabulous. Just fabulous. And that is because we are here on the Movie Ladder podcast, where we are all about cinematic connections. And tonight, we will be talking about the movie starring Warren Beatty, directed by Hal Ashby, Shampoo. My name is Zach Brooks, and I am joined by...
Av Sedensky.
And Brendan Fitzpatrick.
All right, and last week we talked about Dick Tracy, also starring Warren Beatty. So this week, based on, I think, just the Warren Beatty connection to start, we will be talking about Shampoo. Then at the end of the episode, we will decide our next movie based on connections sent in from you, our very fabulous listeners, and us, your very beautiful hosts.
Yeah, just to clarify, it was that the main connection was Warren Beatty, but there was also the connection of Dick Tracy to a movie that is focused on the election night of Richard Dick Nixon.
And a guy who thinks with his dick. Also.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, that's right.
Yeah, he was a dick in both movies.
Right? So now this is our third movies about dicks, along with XXL and The Full Monty.
Yes, perfect.
Well, I don't know about you guys. I've been waiting to make this joke for a solid week. Shampoo is great, but conditioner is better.
Yes. Oh, man, Billy Madison. The best part of Billy Madison.
Oh, man.
Anyway, what have you guys been up to? It's great to be back after a week off.
Weeks are flying by, but crawling by at the same time, I would say.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, March seemed like it was really super slow, and then April seemed like it went by really fast, and now May is also just sort of also going by pretty fast. Like, it's hard to believe it's already May 12th.
Yep.
10 days from now, I'm supposed to be in Hawaii. Obviously, I'm not going. And
you might be able to get there really cheaply, though, if you try to
get there. Yeah, well, apparently they're locking up tourists in Hawaii who leave their hotel rooms and break quarantine, so...
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so it's a good thing I'm not there, actually.
How are you doing, Av?
Let's be honest, I fucked them all.
All right, yes, yeah, so that is the theme.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I did not. I've fucked very few people.
Wow.
I'll get personal on this shampoo podcast.
Have you gotten into the wine tonight?
I had some bourbon. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, nice. So, of course, we will be spoiling what there is to spoil about Shampoo once we start discussing it. So, if you would like to watch Shampoo, you can pause this podcast. It is streaming on the Criterion Channel. And I believe a couple other places as well. And then you can come back and listen. Also, we'll put the timestamp when we start our ladder discussion if you did want to jump ahead. So we'll put that timestamp in the description of this podcast. You can probably see that already. But before we start talking about Shampoo and the state of the world when Nixon was elected, let's talk about the state of the world right now and the best movie that we watched in the last week. So, let's start with you.
Okay, I didn't watch much this week, so I don't think I even necessarily watched a movie that I think is that good. So
that's best is when that happens. When you get when it's like Tuesday night and I'm like, crap, I have to watch the movie for the podcast, but I also have barely watched anything worth talking about
right before
the podcast.
Yeah. So I know I don't remember exact timing. As I mentioned, I'm in the middle of my Nolan rewatch. So I did rewatch both The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, but I think I watched The Dark Knight before we recorded the last podcast. So otherwise, that would definitely be the best movie I watched this week. Although I came out of it not quite as high on The Dark Knight as I previously was. I think it's still like amazing, but I think there's like it's like you're not allowed to say anything other than The Dark Knight is the greatest superhero movie ever made, and I think that that's an open question. So
think that's actually true. I think Iron Man is a better superhero movie. The Dark Knight is a better film. Both came out in the same year. One is a quintessential superhero movie. One is a quintessential film, and I think that's the argument you can make.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are other MCU movies that I would put in the conversation, but
of course. As far as superhero movies that came out in that year,
Iron
Man is a better superhero movie.
There was probably a Ghost Rider movie that year.
Oh yeah, could be.
So and then I saw The Dark Knight Rises, which we talked about last week, which I said I didn't like, and then I watched it again, and I still don't like it.
Did you watch it twice in 1 week?
No. We talked about it last week, and I said I'm not a fan of it, and then it happened to be I watched it the next day or 2 days later because that was the next movie in my my Nolan calendar, right. And I'm still just like not a fan. There's just like so many problems with it. It's better in on at home, I think, than in the theater because you could turn on subtitles and understand what Bane is saying. So that's a plus. I watched the third Harry Potter movie, which was like fine, whatever. They're all like okay. Although I know this one was that one was defended directed by Cuarón, so I expected it to be like much better.
That's the one that eventually, when I read the books and then watch the movies, I'm the most excited for because he directed it.
Yeah,
Azkaban is crazy.
So I didn't like love it much more than like the first two, which I didn't really love either. But anyway, I'm through book four for those following along at home. I'm through movies.
So are you reading and then watching the movie after you read each one?
Yeah, within reason. You know, my wife was like a big Harry Potter fan, so she wants to like watch along with me when I watch the movies. So like it's the movie part is subject to her schedule as well.
Yeah.
And then the movie I do want to talk about as the movie of this week is I think a movie that Zach talked about on this podcast. If not, I talked to him in WhatsApp about it, but I saw the movie Sunshine today.
Ooh.
Last night and today. I finished
spoilers.
It this morning. I won't say any spoilers.
It's good on my watch list forever.
The reputation that Sunshine has is that it's like awesome for three quarters and then the end is like either very polarizing or just horrible. I think everyone thinks the ending is bad. I agree the ending is extremely bad and stupid. And I can get into that I don't want to spoil Brendan. I didn't really love the first three quarters either. I thought it was like fine. It was like a perfectly, I think, just like solid sci-fi movie. The premise I think is like incredible. I thought that was a great premise, the whole idea of like what they're trying to do, that there's this idea that like the sun is starting to burn out and they want to send people out close to the sun and basically shoot the sun basically with a bomb. They think somehow that'll like reignite the sun and like get sunshine back to Earth. But I thought that then it basically just totally veers off and they like kind of lose interest in that premise for like the next hour and just becomes this like, oh, there's this, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's like this other subplot that becomes the focus of like the next hour of the movie. It's not a subplot. It's related to the initial plot, but Zach knows what I'm talking about. I don't want to ruin it.
So when I had seen this movie a long time ago and I remembered nothing about it, including like what happens in it. And this kind of ties back into the discussion we had a few weeks ago about like, is saying that there is something that happens is it a spoiler to say that there is something that happens? But so I watched it back in February, and I agreed with Av that I like wish they would have stuck to the premise more because I think the premise is really interesting, especially like right now when humanity is facing an existential crisis. Like, to watch humanity face a different kind of existential crisis is very interesting. As soon as I got to a certain part of that movie, I was like, oh yeah, this is why this movie is polarizing.
The last act is ridiculous. And I just like it basically just like cuts away from its premise and just like makes it very run of the mill for like most of the movie, where there becomes this like submission of the main mission that like it doesn't even matter what the original mission is anymore because it becomes all about this like secondary aspect of it for the bulk of the movie. And I was disappointed by that. Like I was very excited with like the first 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is like a really cool idea for a movie. And there were some very cool scenes. I know it was written by Alex Garland who did Ex Machina. And I love that. And Annihilation, which I also enjoyed. I was a little disappointed, even expecting the end to suck. I still expected the whole thing to be better than, what I experienced.
Great cast though. Cillian Murphy, Rose Byrne, Chris Evans.
Chris Evans is very good in it. Although I will say I felt like they just like really didn't, like, the characters are very like indistinct in terms of like their personalities. They're just like all about like what their job is.
Having watched a lot of like these like team, you know, space movies, you know, the Alien, Event Horizon. Yeah. Like it does like this idea. I mean, not the premise of this, but the idea of like a team in space in the future is like where there's a big team and then you're just like, okay, well, you know, we'll see what happens. I do think that, like, especially because I've watched a lot of them in the last few months, it definitely got a little played out. But
yeah, it's a great formula, but I agree that like the landing of some of those films is always the hardest thing to stick. Like, it'll usually be like three quarters of a fantastic movie, and then the end is just sort of like, oh, wait, what? And yeah, it does not be as good. Like, Event Horizon is three-fourths of a fantastic movie, and at the end, it just sort of goes off the rails in a really weird way that isn't very well done, but it's still entertaining because it's a cheesy sci-fi horror movie. But, like, there's a lot of movies like that, you know, that came out around that time between 1995 and 2010 in the last 15 years or so that get the best part of those movies are the group getting to know each other and then when shit first starts to go wrong. Mm-hmm. And the end is when it sort of, you know, falls apart.
Yeah.
Because everybody needs to feel like they have to put their twist on it, you know. And it's yep. You know, I'm excited to watch Sunshine because it does sound really good. It's been on my that and Moon have both been
hey,
on
I just said list. I just said it's not that good. My opinion is worthless.
You said it's three quarters good.
It's three quarters of good, and that's good enough. No, some people really love it.
So I don't want to discount that. But
I mean, I felt the same thing about the movie I watched last week, Snowpiercer, where I thought, you know, it was three quarters of a good movie until sort of towards the end when it was just like, eh.
Snowpiercer is better. Av, what were you saying?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I don't think I was saying anything. Go ahead.
But Sunshine and Moon have both been on my watch list forever. And so one night I'm just going to sit down and watch both of them back to back and knock them both out. So,
I love Moon. I like Moon a lot better than Sunshine.
Yeah, I would agree. I've seen Moon, I've seen Event Horizon, Sunshine all in the last like couple months. Mm-hmm. All the Alien movies. I think I liked Moon the best of them. I would have to look at my rankings. Let's see what I said about
Moon. I always mix up which one is Moon is the one with Sam Rockwell, right?
Oh yeah,
Okay.
In Moon I said, I don't think this is a spoiler. I said I like this a lot until the very rushed ending.
Hey, so, there you go. See?
I don't remember it, but yeah, I really like Moon.
There we go. Well, speaking of movies that have been on my watch list forever, I knocked off two movies this week from my personal movie ladder. So based on my connection from a couple weeks ago where I watched Midnight in Paris, which I greatly enjoyed, I took F. Scott Fitzgerald to the Leonardo DiCaprio version of The Great Gatsby, which honestly was just not very good. It was boring. Leo is good because Leo is always good, but even this performance was almost enough to like make me turn it off. Tobey Maguire is just insufferable. There are a couple of really good moments. Like there's a really great scene towards the end in the hotel room that's got really good tension because it's got two really great characters who are just going at each other. Two really great actors just going at each other. But it's just not, I don't know. The Great Gatsby is one of those things that is a great idea in premise to turn into a movie, but just doesn't really hold up because there's just not that much there.
So I read the book in high school and I do not really remember it at all.
I did too. Uh-huh. And I remember it being a lot more like exciting reading it on the page than watching this movie. And so, but then I took that to another movie with great in the title that I had a lot of fun with, which was The Great Muppet Caper, which I hadn't seen since I was probably 3 or 4 years old, came out in 1981. I had never rewatched it as an adult, and it's a lot of fun.
There's a connection to Shampoo in The Great Muppet Caper.
There is a connection to Shampoo and The Great Muppet Caper. The Great Muppet Caper is very fun. That was actually one of the things that I initially thought about bringing up later in the pod, but I decided to run it on my personal watch list instead. But if you haven't rewatched any of the classic Muppet movies in a long time, I highly recommend doing it because they really are a great like hour and a half. Just sit on your couch, turn your brain off, and just enjoy like the characters and the time and place of the Muppets. Like the Muppets just take you back to your childhood in a really great way between this and Muppets Take Manhattan and the Muppet movie. All are really great. That's my recommend of the week is if you're looking for something to just sit down, maybe with the kids and watch something you might not have thought of, Great Muppet Caper. Go for it.
All right. So my movie that was my best movie of the week, I didn't watch very many movies this week. I don't know why, because I'm like home a lot and I don't think I'm watching that much TV. But somehow I haven't watched very many movies. So I did restart my Bond watch and finally watched The Man with the Golden Gun, which I don't know if that was the best movie I watched, but I was glad to start the Bond. I also watched, for my personal movie ladder, I watched Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which I think is what I'm going to talk about. I think that was the best movie I watched this week. At least like the best that we haven't talked about. But I will just plug that Brennan and I both watched The Avengers Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And live chatted with each other while we watched it.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was like a very fun way to spend a Sunday morning. Just like MCU, like watching an MCU movie with a friend and G-chatting throughout the whole thing that you've seen before.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, speaking of fantastic superhero movies that just hold up really well, I mean, The Avengers is just a really good time at the movies. Snappy dialogue, Joss Whedon pacing, it's a really fast movie. For being 2.5 hours, it's a really fast-paced movie.
Yeah, you know? I thought this was my best movie of the week.
Sorry.
But that's okay. It was definitely like... It was definitely funnier than I remember, like Brennan said, like with the Joss Whedon dialogue. Like, I know Joss Whedon gets a lot of credit for bringing the humor to the MCU, but it holds up, as Brennan said. So, and it was cool because, like, I know, you know, MCU, like, everybody talks about how it's, like, so interconnected, but they really do set up a lot of, like, character dynamics in this Avengers movie that, like, pay off 10 movies, 15 movies down the line. So, I thought that was really fun. So... Also a classic score as well. So I would say if you're looking for something fun to watch, watch The Avengers. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. I will quickly talk about that as well. 1967 for that movie. So it takes place, it is made a year before this movie Shampoo takes place. And it felt like a real time capsule movie as I was watching it. Like, definitely could be made today. And I know they tried to remake it with Ashton Kutcher. It was not good. And there were a lot of connections to Get Out as well. So... would say if you like to Get Out, check out Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Some really, really good acting. I don't think I had ever seen anything with Spencer Tracy in it before. And he plays one of the leads in this movie. Have you guys seen anything with Spencer Tracy?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of films with him. Bad Day at Black Rock, and a couple of other classic gangster movies from the 40s and 50s. But Inherit the Wind.
He was in the original Father of the Bride.
He's also the original Father of the Bride, which I've seen, which is really great. I enjoy Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. It's Spencer Tracy's last movie, actually.
Yeah, it says he died in 1967.
Yeah, so. He died shortly after filming Wrapped. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, won an Oscar posthumously for his role in Best Supporting Actor.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
I believe it was posthumous, and... Catherine Hepburn accepted the award, if I recall. On his behalf.
I
could be wrong. You can fact check me, but I believe that is correct. That he won Best Supporting Actor.
My favorite Guess Who's Coming to Dinner reference is from The West Wing, one of my favorite TV shows of all time, where. The president's daughter, Zoe, played by Elizabeth Moss from, you know, Mad Men and Handmaid's Tale, all that sort of stuff.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So she starts dating Dulé Hill, who's like the president's body man. He's black. Somebody asks him, I think John Spencer's character asks him, like, are you have a problem with like a race thing? He's like, it's like race thing. What are you talking about? I'm Spencer Tracy at the end of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Spoiler Which is funny for Guess also Who's Coming to Dinner, but yes.
Yeah. I'm a fan of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. I think the best part of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner is just like the way people react to each other. It's like not even like the dialogue. It's just like you see just like facial reactions and just like the discomfort and like no one knows the right thing to say. And I think there's just like a lot of truth to that even today. It's just like you just like I'm constantly in situations where like nobody is like saying anything racist to anyone, but it's like very clear that like. There's one person in the room who's of a different race than everybody else. And like everyone is very aware of that. And that's just like something that you could just like, there's just like a tension sometimes that's like not, it's not from like a bad place. It's just there. And I think that was very present in the most of this movie, even like the parts where like no one was like being like rude or like saying anything bad. It's just like, you know, that like, that's what everybody's thinking about.
Yeah, and I do think one thing about this movie is like the concept of time doesn't seem to really exist. Like,
yeah, that's the relationship. Right. They go to the airport and come back, and it's like still light outside.
Yeah, and like they had met each other like a few days before, and now they're getting married, and then all of a sudden his parents were like, they were the ones who were, which I didn't realize his parents were the ones, the guests who's coming to dinner. I always thought it was about his character who was coming to dinner, but So my next movie that I'm going to watch in my personal ladder is It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which has lots of connections to Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, including Spencer Tracy and also the same director, Stanley Kramer. So I don't know anything about this movie, but I've heard about it. And I believe it was referenced in the title of a Leftovers episode.
Yes, it's a Matt World.
Matt World. Yep.
That's exactly what I thought about when you said that. I have no idea what the movie is.
And it's Mel Brooks, right? Mad World.
That makes sense.
No.
You're thinking of History of the World.
You're thinking something different.
I'm thinking of History of the World. Never
Stanley
mind.
Kramer, who was the same director of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And Sidney Poitier is the name of the actor whose name was escaping me. I feel terrible about that. Poitier. Yes.
Poitier. Yeah. I read a book last year about the 1967 Best Picture slate. It's 1967 is like known as this like very just like iconic transformational year in Hollywood, because like that's when like the movies that year were like, it was like two like old school like classic type movies, and then like two like very like progressive, like ahead of its time movies, like The Graduate and Bonnie and Clyde is one of the other one. Whereas like In the Heat of the Night, I guess Coming to Dinner, I guess aren't really old school. They're just more like, they're old school like genre, but like they both have like the racial component to them that I think was probably a little bit more ahead of its time. And then the fifth movie is Doolittle, which is like one of like the most panned movies of all time. It was a complete flop. And it's just like, it's like four like all time great movies and this horrible movie that was just basically forced in because like the studio still had like immense power to affect things before like the studio system started collapsing over, you know, the next like two or three years, and like independent filmmakers really started to make their mark in Hollywood. So it's just like a really funny like little like testament. Like you look at that slate and you're like, one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah.
Also 1967, You Only Live Twice came out, which is currently the number one Bond movie on my list of all the Bond movies I've been watching.
Oh, nice.
Nice. So,
it's viewed as this like very transformational year in Hollywood. 67.
Yeah. I was looking through 1967 movies. And I was also looking through 1968 movies earlier today, for reasons that we will talk about soon.
We'll get there.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that's a good, that is a good transition point. So,
speaking of 1968 Hollywood.
So, speaking of 1968 in Hollywood, let's travel back to 1968 in Hollywood by way of 1975 Hollywood. Talk about Shampoo, which is starring Warren Beatty and directed by Hal Ashby. So this is a movie that takes place on Election Day in 1968. It is the day that Richard Nixon was elected president of the United States, which serves as a backdrop. And it stars Warren Beatty. It stars Julie Christie, who I was not familiar with before this movie.
I wasn't either.
Goldie Hawn. Jack Warden, who is a terrific that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And
fantastic 70s and 80s that guy.
And 90s. He was in Problem Child.
Yeah. Jack Warden was in all of the Muppet movies, I think, also.
And Carrie Fisher makes her film on-screen debut. Yep. Which Carrie Fisher is the daughter of Debbie Reynolds, right?
Yes.
Correct. Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher. Yep.
Who's Eddie Fisher?
Eddie Fisher is a 1950s singer / actor who was very famous for a short period of time before he pretty much got blacklisted after what he did to Debbie Reynolds.
Oh, interesting. All
right. He left Debbie Reynolds for Elizabeth Taylor and didn't do much work after that.
Oh, speaking of guys who leave women for other women, so this movie is about a womanizer who's also a hairdresser.
Yeah, there you go.
In Beverly Hills. So, you know, we will talk about that movie. I think this is the first movie ladder movie that has been new for all of us.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm not positive about that. Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, had anybody seen the original for that? That might have been. Okay. I had seen the remake, but I had not seen the original. And the only other one I was thinking that might have been new for... Well, Full Monty might have been new for all of us.
Yeah, and Magic Mike XXL. Yeah, you're way off here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. We'll go through this next week when we go through all 20 movies and just talk about our experience, how, what we remember from each of them.
Yeah.
So, but, yes, as Brendan teased, next week is our 20th. So we were talking about doing like our, we'll look at like our overall rankings and see top 10 of our overall rankings and where things fall after 20 episodes.
So, Warren Beatty plays a character George. Named George. He's a hairstylist at a salon in Beverly Hills. He's actually a composite, but the most famous person he's a composite of is Hollywood hairdresser Jay Sebring, who is most well known as being a victim of the Manson murders. He was murdered alongside Sharon Tate and a couple other people.
poor other people.
By the Manson family. I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me.
He was actually Sharon Tate's ex-boyfriend.
Correct. Yeah.
And then for some reason decided to stay best friends with her and live with her after she was married to Roman Polanski.
Which is why I feel like, and I could be wrong here because this isn't in the rundown at all, but it's my lingering question from the movie. Is Goldie Hawn supposed to be Sharon Tate? Or based off of Sharon Tate?
She certainly looks like her.
Interesting. I didn't even think of that.
So
she kind of looks like Sharon Tate and they break up at the end of the movie, but I could see him going back to her and then becoming friends. And it kind of felt like she was supposed to be Sharon Tate because she was this young up and coming star who was like trying to make it big.
Wasn't she a photographer though? Or was she an actress in this movie? It wasn't clear. I got the impression she was like a photographer. She had to go to Egypt. So I thought she was a photographer in this movie.
Well, she's definitely not explicitly Sharon Tate because her name is not Sharon Tate. It's something else. Jill, right?
But I guess there was an homage there to Sharon Tate with her
character in the trail. That could definitely be. Although I think it's like, it's not exactly clear that it's really Jay Sebring. I think later on he said it was really some other guy that nobody had heard of. And he kind of just like went with the Jay Sebring thing since he was somewhat famous. So yeah, I don't know. But yeah,
there's also, you know, if Jay Sebring or if Sharon Tate left Jay Sebring to be with the director, Roman Polanski, I'm not sure who the other guy was, the mustached guy. I don't even think they ever said his name in the movie.
And Jill is not an actress as far as we know. So.
Right.
But it was the vibe I was getting from those scenes.
That guy might have been a director. I mean, they have like meeting. Yeah. They have a meeting early in the movie but they were talking about going to Egypt on some project and he was also in Egypt.
Exactly.
I think it's interesting. The overall plot of this movie is we follow, you know, we follow George, and he is this hairdresser with all of these clients, these women all along Hollywood, and he basically just like sleeps with everybody.
He, for one, is a man whore.
Yes, he's definitely a man whore. We open the movie with him in bed with some woman that is not his girlfriend, and he has to go home to be with his girlfriend.
Exactly.
Who tries then to have sex with him, but he's not interested.
Right.
Probably because he just had sex 10 minutes ago.
Which is a problem he runs into a few times in this movie.
Yeah.
So I kept mixing up the Julie Christie character and the Lee Grant character because they kind of had the same hairstyles.
I was confusing every single female character in this movie because they all have the same haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be intentional, but I knew who Goldie Hawn's character was. I knew who Joe was, and I knew who Carrie Fisher's character was because it's Carrie Fisher, very young Carrie Fisher.
And she only had one scene.
So. Yes, that's true. She was only in one scene. I wrote that down as well. I was like, I feel bad, but I don't know who anybody is. By the end of the movie, I was able to tell.
It was Jack Warden's wife and Jack Warden's mistress, and I couldn't tell which one was which a lot of the time, and it was very confusing.
The fact that like everyone is like sleeping with everyone makes it confusing because you can't just be like, oh, that's Jack's mistress because that's also George's ex girlfriend who is Gil's best friend. Yeah, it's very incestuous.
All the female characters have names that are similar, so it's like, I don't know who we're talking about.
Yeah, because we have Jill, we have Jackie, we have Felicia, Felicia. And I felt like when I was watching this movie, I could have been like that Charlie Day meme where he's sitting in front of the board with the pictures and all the strings attached.
Making just the connections between all the characters.
And once I realized that was what this movie was, I actually kind of like, I thought it was very like, It was very subtly funny. Like, I was like, oh, all these people know each other. They're all sleeping with each other. They're all cheating on each other with each other. Maybe this, the mustached guy who goes unnamed, who I guess maybe is supposed to look like a beetle because there's a lot of beetles in this movie. You know, like, I was like, oh, he should be, like, sleeping with somebody that we don't even know about. And then this would just be, like, one big ball of STDs passed back and forth between all.
Well, and to go off of our earlier point about sometimes a movie is great until the climax, I actually was having a hard time, and I think it was because I was having a hard time following it, but I wasn't really into this movie until the big party scene about three quarters through the movie when everything sort of just starts to come together and blow up at everybody else's faces because everybody starts crossing paths, and then George gets caught at the end, and I was like, okay, now I get it. This is really good. It was all
I did love the part. The party scene and was
great. Yeah, both of the party scenes. The fundraiser scene was really great, where Jack Warden's wife gets super drunk. I think it's his wife, or is that his mistress?
No, Jack. It was his mistress. Jack.
The mistress gets drunk. Okay. Yeah, the mistress gets really drunk, and she had some really good lines in there. About, like, he won't even screw me, yada yada. Like, and then she tries to go down on George, like, at the dinner table, which I kind of found really funny. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I think I was supposed to be appalled, but it was actually really funny. But, and then leading into the big party at the house in the hills was really great. But I think part of the problem was I didn't even realize everybody was at that party until Jack Warden was walking through and ends up going to the same pool house.
Yeah, I also wasn't sure how that happened. I guess just because Jill and the mustache guy wanted to go to the party, and he was
but
in the
back
seat.
But I didn't realize it was the same party. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And then he almost gets in the hot tub or whatever.
Yeah.
On other podcasts I talk about, like, oh, what was the best scene or, like, most rewatchable scene of this movie? Like, I do think, like, as soon as George gets to that party, like, that whole stretch was really good. And it was a really good comparison or contrast to the Nixon, like, buttoned up tuxedo black tie party. And, like, you know, everybody at this big house party, like, they were all, like, the Democrats who were against Nixon. Who did Nixon run against in that?
I disagreed. I thought these were all Nixon types. These were, like, highfalutin, like, bow tie Republicans.
No, that party.
Oh, at the
we're talking
the,
about the house
okay,
party.
Sorry. Those were hippies. Yes.
These were all people that were lined up to vote for Bobby Kennedy before he got assassinated.
Yes. Okay. Sorry, I misunderstood.
So they probably didn't vote at all. Nobody at that house party voted at
exactly.
all.
Yeah. No. RFK was going to dominate the youth vote.
Yeah. Exactly.
This movie gave me like a pre-PTSD for November, basically. Even though it's a re-election, like, oh yeah, this is what November's going to be like. All the rich people in their tuxedo parties are going to be celebrating that Donald Trump gets four more years in office.
Absolutely.
I'm in a very triggered mood this week already. So this movie.
You seem very triggered this week, but it's okay.
Triggered me a little bit.
But this, I really enjoyed the party. I think the music in this movie is really great.
Yes.
And that all sort of culminates in the party, too. Like, the song choice is really great by using the Beatles at the beginning and end of the party. And
Jimi Hendrix, also.
And the guy that's supposed to look like Jimi Hendrix that's smoking weed while Hendrix plays was really great. Yeah, it was all really good.
Yeah there's a lot of weed in this movie.
There's so much weed. That's true. That's 68.
Seems
like summer
low. Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, plot wise there's a ton really to get into. I mean, I do like the idea of, like, a movie that has the backdrop of a historic event and, like, takes, like, because I went into this movie, like, expecting that it was gonna be about Nixon, like, more about Nixon, and it was just like Nixon was just like on, you know, this is a great movie for subtitles as well, because every radio broadcast or TV broadcast, like, it would subtitle what they were saying, and so I could follow, like, what was actually going on in the background. And so it's just like, we're just, like, living through the day that Nixon's getting elected, but it's not really about Nixon at all.
Yeah. I think thematically it is. In that, so, like, I think what this movie is like trying to capture a little bit is that like there's always this like bemoaning of like the end of the 60s and like Nixon. Mm. That was like the when like America lost its innocence, right? That like Nixon was like this, you know, especially like in retrospect, like looking back, like after, especially once everyone knows like, about Watergate and how Vietnam just kind of like spiraled out of control and became, you know, like one of the worst chapters in American history. It's like very easy to look and say, you know, the day that Richard Nixon was elected president was the day when everything went to shit.
Right. And it's, I mean, Nixon got elected promising to get us out of Vietnam and it took an additional 7 years.
Right. But what I think what this movie is trying to get at is that's just like a bullshit narrative to an extent, because like, we were already in Vietnam, like 1968, which was, you know, the summer of 1968, which is before Nixon was elected, is like one of like the worst summer, like the worst years in American history with all these assassinations and the riots. And it's just like, it's lazy to say that like Nixon's election, like this day was like this like turning point in American history. Right. When like the ground had already been laid for like a lot of the bad things that would happen over the next 5 to 10 years. And, you know, even after that. And I think in a similar way, in just like the personal lives that we see all these people go, specifically George, it's like, it would be easy for him to like wake up that morning of November, whatever, the day that Richard Nixon is now president, and say like, today is the day that like everything went to shit. When it's like, no, like it's because of like the way you've been, you know, conducting yourself for however long, and just like sleeping with every woman that you bump into, which, you know, I'm not gonna begrudge somebody to do that if like that's on the table, but, you know, don't act like this was like something that was spiraled out of control, nothing to do with you. Like you acted in a way that was just like setting yourself up to just like have like your life be a mess. And like just like own up a little bit to like what your actions were that contributed over time. It's like I always thought that like one of the most brilliant things about Breaking Bad was that it would like be so easy for like a Walter White like person to like at the end of it say like, oh, if only I had like done like one thing different, like there could have been a happy ending. And then like I think what the point of Breaking Bad was that like, no, it was like the accumulation of many bad choices over a long period of time that like made your ending inevitable. And like you can't just say like, oh, if only like I had, you know, not done this to Jesse, or if I had like you know, spoken to Hank earlier or whatever. It's like, you know, like you got in bed with like horrible people, and like there was only one way this story ends for you.
Yeah.
Right.
I really like that read on this movie, and it's something that I you know, I, that makes sense. I don't know enough about, you know, like the Nixon stuff. I've listened to Slow Burn, and like I follow some of the Nixon stuff, but it's just like it's always hard for me to like put myself in that context and like what, you know, like even like Watergate. I'm like, was Watergate, you know, Watergate was for his re-election campaign, right? Not his first election.
Correct.
And
a re-election campaign where he won 49 states, so he didn't really need to cheat.
So it's like having, you know, having that context, and it makes a lot of sense that like, yeah, George could look at his behavior as like, oh, like he can look back at this day just like, you know, I look back at November 11th, 2016, and I'm like, oh my God, what a terrible day. It was the accumulation of things. But one of the things I was thinking about watching this movie is like, why is this movie called Shampoo? Like, yes, it's about a guy who cuts hair, but why is it about shampoo? And the thing that kept coming back to my mind was rinse, repeat, right? Like they say, shampoo, rinse, repeat. And that's George's life, right? Like George lost out on these few relationships that he has in his life, but his behavior is probably not going to change. He's probably just going to keep sleeping around with like whoever the next woman who comes into his beauty salon is that has him cut her hair. So, you know, he's just going to rinse, repeat the bad decisions in his life. And it fits really well with what Ab was saying.
And just to add on further to that, I didn't even think of the rinse, repeat theme, but I had written down in my notes that I noticed that when they were at the dinner, I think this was at the Republican dinner, let's say, you know, the richer people. There was a picture of Ronald Reagan, like in the background behind the big pictures of Nixon.
I noticed that too, and I was really confused by that.
Yeah. Well, he was the governor of California at the time.
Oh,
yeah. So it makes perfect sense that like at a, you know, a Republican, you know, hall or whatever, they would, you know, have a picture of the current Republican governor. And with the rinse repeat, it's like you would think that like probably when Warren Beatty made this movie, Beatty, I don't know how to pronounce his name, in 1975, with now Nixon out of office resigning in horror after the Watergate scandal, you would think it's like, well, obviously the Republican Party is going to be dead for a very long time. And then like it was only 1 year later that Reagan delivered what's known as like a very, you know, triumphant speech at the Republican National Convention in a losing effort to Gerald Ford, but really put himself on the map. And then, of course, was the Republican nominee and a two-term president that has really shaped the conservative movement for the last 40 years. So it's like, somehow by accident, Warren Beatty like predicted the future in terms of it's like, okay, you know, we're watching this aware of what happens to Nixon. And like, he somehow put in like little snapshot of the guy who was going to kind of pick up the mantle and like get the conservative movement back on track in this country.
Oh, right. Yeah. And I think part of that, part of the theme of that also is that sometimes it doesn't matter what the big picture is like of what's going on in the world, because the little people who are just trying to live their lives every day are still going to keep living their lives, and George is going to keep doing what he does in his daily life, and it doesn't matter who got elected president that night.
Yeah, he didn't even,
because it's not changing him as a person.
Well, I say that, but actually, I feel like when George walks into the Republican Party, he seemed like really discombobulated once he realized that they were at like a Nixon victory party. I don't think he realized that's what they were going to, because he was like bumping into people and like seemed very like taken aback when they got there. And it seemed to coincide with when he saw like all the Nixon stuff everywhere. Well, so I think like,
I thought he was just freaking out because three of his girlfriends were all in the same group.
Oh, it could be that.
I mean, that was more, I thought, what he was freaking out about.
The Ronald Reagan thing is crazy though, because I was thinking about that. I'm like, oh, well, they clearly put Ronald Reagan in there because it's like, yeah, like, you know, like when I saw that, I was confused, but then I was like, oh yeah, it must be like, you know, like this is just gonna, this cycle is gonna keep going. But actually,
yeah, I think it's just it's just a coincidence. I mean, you know, he was the governor, but like, I don't think he was like a national figure yet at the time. I mean, he might, in Hollywood, he probably was, because he was obviously an actor and he was very involved in like the Hollywood unions and like fighting against like the communists in like Hollywood. So like, he was probably a well-known figure in Hollywood, and you know, and he's the sitting governor at the time. So it's like not crazy just to like be like, oh, let's like throw our friend Ronald Reagan into this.
Yeah, it's like kind of poking at him though, right? Like,
yes. I mean,
it could be read like that. Also, Hal Ashby directed this movie, not Warren Beatty.
Right.
Yes, you're right. Sorry.
Warren Beatty was in it. Warren Beatty directed our last movie. He did not
direct it. Yes, correct. Yeah, and he's directed a bunch of movies.
Yeah. That brings me to Hal Ashby. Have you guys watched a lot of other Hal Ashby movies? My brother is like obsessed with him recently.
I have
sure
not.
I've seen any.
So he did his big ones. He did Harold and Maude, which I saw because Sammy Chester said it's like his favorite movie ever. And so then I saw it at the library. So I rented it. I saw it and I was like, oh, my brother is going to love this movie. I liked it, but I like knew it was right up my brother's alley. So there's a lot of
In the Heat of the Night, I've seen.
Okay. So I
haven't seen. And I've seen Being There, but I have not seen.
So Being There has a lot of political undertones in it as well. A rich guy, and the guy dies, and then it's almost like I've heard it compared to like Forrest Gump, because he's like just like not in tune with like society, and he's just like let out, and I think he ends up with all this money, and I believe he runs up into like this inheritance from the guy who dies, but there is like this whole like political scandal undertone in Being There. So Being There could actually be a really good connection to this movie. And Harold and Maude is about like a relationship, basically, that's like a very like loving relationship between a much older woman and a much younger guy. But the music in that ties into this, because it's just like there's great Cat Stevens throughout that movie. And it reminded me a lot of like the Beach Boys and the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix was in this movie. So but I don't know about In the Heat of the Night. What is that about, Av?
It's like a murder mystery detective story, except it has a big racial element, because the main detective is a black man and he's not completely trusted by the police force there. It's Sidney Poitier is the actor. Yeah,
man, he's coming up a lot today. So
And he may come up later in one of our connections. We'll have to see.
Ooh, interesting. All right. Anything else like that you guys really want to point out of this movie? I mean, I think that thematically there's some really good stuff. There's some great the apartments and the houses. I really liked all of those.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. I thought the cinematography was good, but there were some shots that were just a little too, and it may have just been the type of film that was used, because it's an old school film that was trying to make it feel like an even older movie. But it was like kind of grainy and hard to see sometimes. But overall, I thought it was really well done. And I thought the performances were pretty good from our three leads in Warren Beatty, Goldie Hawn, and Jack Warden. I all three really liked.
Oh, you didn't even mention Lee Grant, who won an Oscar for this.
Did she? I didn't even realize that.
She won Best Supporting Actress.
Lee Grant, did she play Jackie? Or did she play Felicia?
She played Felicia.
Oh, Felicia. All right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm confused by that. If I was going to give it to anyone from this movie, I would have given it to Christine for Jackie. I thought she was the most interesting character in the movie.
Because I don't even recall too much about Felicia and her deal. So, yeah, I wouldn't have given it to her. That's an odd choice.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast about this, and they speculated that, like, politics just might have played a part. It was just like, you know, people liked her and it was her time or something. I don't remember exactly what the details were, but like they were like very surprised, and they were like trying to figure out why she won, and like they found something that suggested that maybe, like, you know, she was just like very well liked at that time.
One of those achievement awards where, you know, it's that first time.
Yeah, I don't know enough about her career to know, like, you know, if she was like owed one from something else or how long she's been around, but, you know, they were also scratching their heads trying to figure out why, of the people in this movie who you would think could be an Oscar winner, why it would be her.
Yeah, because it definitely would have been Goldie Hawn for me as Best Supporting Actress, but okay.
I did think Goldie Hawn was gave a really good performance in this too. I have seen a lot of Goldie Hawn movies, but
I mean,
wait, this wasn't her first movie, was it?
This was her first movie.
Oh, yeah, that's a great performance.
She was only known for Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In up to this point.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is like a movie ladder special right here, what I'm going to tell you. So she was in The Heat of the Night, which we just talked about.
Yeah.
She was in Valley of the Dolls, which Sharon Tate was in.
We're talking about Lee Grant, right?
Lee Grant, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was looking up to.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so she was around for a good amount of time. She's been around since 1951. She was nominated for an Oscar for Detective Story in 1951. That was her first movie.
Oh, yeah.
She was nominated for a Golden Globe for In the Heat of the Night.
Got it.
And then she was nominated for another Oscar in 1970 for The Landlord. So, okay, so yeah, I think you could probably say, like, you know, people felt like, you know, it was her time or something.
She's
goddess. Yeah, this, I guess, you know, that just happens from time to time. She it looks like she's been nominated like 5 times or so.
Yeah, so it was probably like we got to give her this one. Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense.
I also think, you know, we should talk about Carrie Fisher a little bit. She was only in one scene, mostly because I wanted to bring up the food that she kept offering to George. She offered him lox. She offered him chopped liver and a baked apple.
She's obviously of the Jewish
very
faith.
Very Jewish, yeah.
I don't know about the baked apple part, but lox and chopped liver.
I was going to ask if you'd ever had a baked apple before.
I have, but that's not a Jewish food. Yeah. The other two are very, very Jewish foods.
My mom was just telling me the other day how her mom used to make the best chopped liver ever.
Chopped livers.
I don't know if I've ever had it, but I'm like, I would try that.
I would necessarily recommend it to Brendan. I don't know if a Gentile stomach can handle it. But.
Yeah, not Brendan, that's for sure.
Yeah, probably not. I have a very weak stomach as
well. Brendan is a fan of lox and bagel. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
who
is it?
Yes, I mean, let's be real.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, even I like lox and bagel, and I don't eat meat anymore. But that is worth breaking it sometimes for.
Yeah, absolutely, especially for a good one.
And then we get a how old was Carrie Fisher?
Carrie Fisher would have been around 17, I think, at this point.
Yeah. So, George definitely is problematic in this movie.
Oh yeah, 100%.
George rapey,
Oh yeah, I mean, there's that scene in the bathroom where she's like, Steve "No, I don't want to have sex with you."
That's not good. Between that and then like,
Carrie Fisher was born in 1956, so she would have been 19 around.
Okay.
But I feel like the character she was playing was not supposed to.
Because 2 years later, she did Star Wars, so she was 21. So yeah.
And you know, just to connect this to Dick Tracy a little bit. So, you know, obviously Warren Beatty in the lead is the connection here. I do think, like, we talked last week on the Dick Tracy podcast just about how, like, wooden and bland he was in Dick Tracy. And in this, he's, like, the other end of the spectrum. Like, he's, like, very flamboyant, very, like they keep asking if he's gay. They think he's, like, they call him a fairy. And they drop too many hard Fs in this movie as well.
Lots of hard Fs. There's a lot you have to kind of ignore about this movie in this day and age that would be problematic. Like, this movie couldn't be made in the same way now.
But yeah, it did predict some things. So
what I thought was interesting was that, like, I felt like their use of the word cock at the time was probably, like, so transgressive, and, like, people were shocked to hear that. But then they just, like, dropped the F word over and over, and probably everyone was just like, yeah, well, that's what he is.
Yeah, even now when she's like, when she kept saying cock, I was like, all right,
say a different word.
I really liked when he came out of Jack Warden's house in, like, a leather jacket with a tank top and a tie around his neck. Like, that was, like, some kind of, like, flamboyant fashion. And I was like, what is he wearing? But I loved it. I think that was my favorite outfit in the movie. It was hilarious.
And he rides his motorcycle all over L.A., which I feel like there's something else I watched recently where a character, like, drives a motorcycle all the time. But I can't think of what it is. But that, like, seemed very familiar to me. But, yeah. And I love the location. Like, the Hollywood Hills. You know, that's just, like, a great setting for a movie. Yeah. It looks really nice, so...
Yeah. All right.
Anything you guys have on this before we move on to feedback from the listeners? I know we at least have feedback from one. All right. Well, let's get into our feedback on this. We got feedback in from one person who watched the movie. And this is from Jeff. Now, Jeff is older than us. Jeff said that he, I think he gets into it in here. He said, this is the worst movie that we have watched to date. There is much to unpack. Well, that should be a good thing, Jeff. First, when you guys discussed the movie, you talked about having something to do with Nixon. Having been around when this movie came out, I didn't remember that being a part of the movie at all. Mm-hmm. It actually was a weird part of the movie. So to see his picture up in places and we hear the background of Walter Cronkite talking about the election results, it was odd. Aside from that oddity, which can be a prop to set the time period, the only redeeming thing about this movie is the soundtrack during the hippie party. So Jeff also liked the party. Some great music in this movie. Great classic.
Yeah, absolutely.
He said the movie had no discernible plot. Yeah, I would say there wasn't really much of a plot.
Yeah, it's a slice of life. It's a day in the life.
Yeah, day in the life.
It's just a couple days in the life of a man whore. Oh, so he also drops man whore. I agree. He was a man whore. He talked about the problematic scene where him forcing himself on Felicia. I couldn't even remember. Was it Felicia or was it Jackie that he forced himself on? I think it was Jackie that he forced.
I thought it was Jackie, but as we said, they all
looked the same. Yes.
It's hard to...
She keeps saying, I can't believe I'm saying this, but he liked both Magic Mike movies better than this clunker. 1.5, and it only gets that rating because of the music.
Speaking of scenes that weren't that bad, I actually did think the way Jack Warden and Warren Beatty and Joey Christy play the shower scene when he comes in and he's blow drying her hair to like pretending to be steaming her hair when he comes home so that they won't get caught having an affair.
Right.
Friggin' hilarious.
That was really funny.
And then
right after he raped her was very funny.
Yeah. Just the look on Jack Warden's face, like, wait, what? And then he like double checks and he's like, all right, I guess.
Right. It was a look of like, I don't know how this is supposed to work, but this doesn't seem right. But like, I'm not sure enough to like do anything other than walk away and just like act like, I guess this is how you do a woman's hair.
I don't know much about hair, but I feel like the steam would screw it up.
If that's what you're going for, if you're going for like a perm, which is more like the look then, I guess. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. One other story is they say at the end Norman's son died in a car accident, and they dedicate like a decent chunk of time at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I was confused why that was like a plot line.
Was Norman the other person who worked, the guy who kept covering for him at the hair salon? Is that who Norman was? Did you guys pick up on that?
Yeah, it was the other guy. Yeah.
So the only reason why, as we're talking about this, I can think that they would highlight that is just like as Av was talking about, like, you know, Norman is probably also going to look back on this day as the worst day of his life.
Yeah, it felt like a dropped plotline because I think Norman was the owner that he talks to at the very beginning when he's
always giving a hard time.
Yeah, he's the owner of the salon.
Yeah. Do you guys think that George, I know we talked about like he's just going to keep the cycle. Do you think George is eventually going to get his own salon, or is he just going to keep working in this same place? And maybe that's why.
No, I don't think he does.
Yeah. So maybe Norman's son dying is like what keeps him in this toxic cycle of like never growing up.
Can be.
They do say grow up a lot in this movie. They yell at him to grow up. So maybe it's just about his lack of becoming an adult and just like wanting to live this man whore life as like, you know, these other women in his life are moving on to Egypt and Acapulco and other men. And yeah, I think that also, who was he with at the beginning of the movie? Did we ever figure that out? Are we supposed to know who that was that he was with, like at his apartment?
At the very beginning at his apartment, I believe was the wife, Jack Warden's wife.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I couldn't tell. Because he was with somebody. He was obviously
it's really hard to tell. Yeah.
See anything. Yeah, it's dark. Maybe that was the point also, that you're like, it's just like one of his many like sexual exploits as he's going home to Joe. So, all right. Last thing I have. Did you guys have any other connections with this movie and other movies that we've watched? Because I had a couple I wrote down.
Nothing that I thought of.
Yeah. I mean, I did think that, you know, there's a lot of sliding doors potential, like we were talking about, within George's decisions to if he decided to do one thing or not do one thing over the other, his life may have turned out very differently, and he may not have gotten caught, and he may not have had to sleep with all these women, and he may have gotten the bank loan, and you know, so it's sort of a sliding doors.
That's true. And sliding doors had people having affairs in it as well.
Yeah, it did. There was some love triangles going on. There's, you know, love triangles in a couple of the movies we've watched so far.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels had that.
Scoundrels had a good one. Yeah, what else?
So I have a couple I wrote down. I always like to try to jot these down. And the more movies we do, the more ways I can think of connections. So the first is that Lester, his catchphrase, because he says it multiple times, is, am I right or am I right? Which reminded me a lot of Ned Ryerson.
All right. Well, that you just gave me an additional thing to write down in one of my connections. So
oh, good. I'm glad you said it. Jill's boss, I thought, looked like Mark Ruffalo with a wig and a mustache on.
Yeah.
The guy that she was, we don't know the name of him. I guess we could probably look on IMDb and find out. And then the last one, the only way you're ever going to get money out of a bank is to rob one. Which plenty of bank robbery movies.
Yeah, plenty of crime movies so far. So yeah.
Also a Nixon mask in Point Break.
Right.
Good point, so. Nixon. Yeah.
And Reagan.
Oh, and Reagan. Mm-hmm. Yep. So. All right. We have to do our ratings now. Almost forgot.
Yeah, let's do our ratings.
Rob, you start again.
Yep. I enjoyed this. You know, it was a lot of fun. It wasn't too long. You know, it's just, you know, as we said, this day in the life, slice of life. I thought it was a good time, and I really took something out of like what I think were like kind of the deeper themes that the movie was going with the Nixon backdrop, and I will give it a 3.5.
Nice. Brennan, did you think we forgot something? You sounded like you were trying to get in.
Oh no, we can do it last. I was just gonna say that Jeff did rate it. We didn't say.
Oh, I said yeah, 1.8.
Oh, Jeff, did you say it was 1.5? Okay, yep. Great. Sorry.
Jeff rated it at 1.5. Our listener, my bad. One listener. Well, Jeff has all the power over the listener rating this week.
Yeah, I know, right?
All right, so, I will give Brendan the microphone to do next.
So I'm gonna go right in between Jeff and Av. I realized as we were talking about this, I was gonna initially give this movie a 2.5. And then as we were talking it through and talking about some of the things I really liked about the movie, instead of focusing on the negatives, I realized I actually did like this movie a little more than I initially thought. And also, I haven't yet given a solid 3 to a single movie in 19 movies. I'm going to bump my initial score of 2.5 up to a 3. So that's going to be a 3 from me and a 3.5 from Av.
All right. And I am like Brendan. I like this movie more the more we talked about it. Especially because I literally stopped watching this movie like right before we got on the phone. and so I'm going to give it a 3.5. And I'm going to also take a little something from Jeff and say the music bumped it up a little bit for me and the setting. So that should be a fun one to figure out. So we got a 3.5, yeah. 3.5, a 3.0, so and a 1.
Sounds like about a 3 to
me. It's a 2.875, which is going to bump us up to a solid 3.
Yep,
when all is said and done. So
just a hair below a 3, so we'll give it a 3.
So we're going to call it a 3 and call it a day.
I think this movie could be, you know, if this was ever on, I don't think it would ever be on in the background, but this wouldn't be a bad one to just, like, watch. Right. Like, it's like, just to watch with, like, something else going on, because it's, like, it's
got a solid soundtrack. It's got a couple of rewatchable scenes. Like, I would rewatch the last three quarters of this movie again, just from the midpoint of the election night gala to the end of the hippie party was just really fun and really good filmmaking. And I thought that's why it got bumped up to a 3 for me. It's just for that 20 to 30 minute stretch there.
Yeah. All right. With that, we gave Shampoo a 3. So let's move on to our latter discussion to figure out a movie that connects to Shampoo that we will be discussing on next week's podcast. I'd like to start this off with our listener connections. Of course, if you have a connection that you want to send in based on the movie that we're about to pick, you can tweet it at us at Ladder Movie, or you can email us themovieladder@gmail.com. All right, Brendan, what do we got for listener connections?
So we got a few listener connections that were sent in this week. We're a little light on the mailbag, but it's okay. So these are what we would call a loose connection first from Jeff. I'm not sure if you guys are going to allow it, but I do like the movies that he suggested. So based off of Goldie Hawn, he suggested 2 movies starring Goldie Hawn's daughter. My only issue with this being a straight connection is that it would be a better connection if Goldie Hawn's daughter in the movie that we just watched was Carrie Fisher. But because Goldie Hawn's character doesn't have a daughter in the movie, this connection is rather
tenuous.
At least
not yet. She might get pregnant in Egypt.
She might. But he suggests How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days and Almost Famous, starring Goldie Hawn's daughter, Kate Hudson, both of which I greatly enjoy.
I saw How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days in college, and I like hated it with a passion.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it'd be interesting to check that out again and see if my opinion has changed.
Is that the one with, like, they go to, like, a Knicks game?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's writing an article, I think, about how to get a guy to break up with her in 10 days, and
it's her and McConaughey.
It's really good. Before McConaughey was, like, a respected actor.
Yeah. And then Almost Famous actually has a pretty relevant love triangle, so that's a better connection to this movie than Kate Hudson actually being in it. So I hope Jeff doesn't mind, but I'm actually going to call this a love triangle connection centering around music rather than Kate Hudson, because I think that's a stronger connection.
What year was Almost Famous taking place?
It didn't. 1976.
Oh, okay.
So it's in the mid 70s because it's during 70s rock.
I love Almost Famous.
Yeah, I do too.
It's been a very long time since I've seen Almost Famous, so I would be interested in seeing.
Love triangle, and then two movies starring Jack Warden, Run Silent, Run Deep, which I'm not familiar with.
I'm not either.
And the famous sports movie Brian's Song, which has a connection both for having Jack Warden and the music of Shampoo was done by Brian Wilson. So literally it's Brian's Song.
Oh.
Shampoo is Brian's Song. Brian's Song could be our next movie per Jeff.
Brian Wilson, was he the member of the Beach Boys that lived in that house?
Yep.
Okay, that's interesting.
He lived in
it's a double connection.
And it was Polanski Tate House where the murders happened.
Brian Wilson was there too.
I know one of the Beach Boys did, and that's what's his name? Marilyn Manson. He used to live there.
What year was Sharon Tate murdered?
1969, July 1969.
Oh, so that was after this. But, correct. I mean, if this movie takes place in 68 and she's supposed to be Sharon Tate, okay.
Yeah, and this probably isn't correct, but my headcanon is that the party scene in this movie probably took place at one of those Brian Wilson parties that are so famous from around that time. So, you know, that's where my headcanon made. So speaking of Hal Ashby movies, like Shampoo, your brother wrote in, Aaron J., and said The Landlord, which is a movie I'm not familiar with.
So it is Hal Ashby's first movie.
Hal Ashby's very first movie. Okay.
Yeah, and it has Lee Grant in it as well, so that is another connection. I don't really know much about it. I don't know if we want to know much about it. I will say that the Letterboxd Letterboxd description for Shampoo kind of spoils like a lot of what happens in that movie.
Yeah, that's why I prefer when I'm looking up movies to go to IMDb, because you can look at the quick plot summary. which right, usually doesn't spoil
let's
it.
Let's see what the landlord has on IMDb. I'm clicking over right now. It's
all right, just to clarify, it wasn't Brian Wilson didn't live there. It was Terry Melcher who was like,
like a
producer for some of their albums. He wasn't in the Beastie
Boys. Yeah, but he was very good friends with Brian.
He was good friends with Brian Wilson. Correct. So Brian Wilson was probably there. Like, yeah. Yes, and I think Brian Wilson was like friendly with Charles. I keep saying Marilyn Manson. Charles Manson, like Charles Manson was trying to become like a musician and was like, you know, trying to get Brian Wilson and Terry Melcher. Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So while Zach is looking up the landlord, I'm gonna go ahead and go on to Olin's connections.
I looked it up, and the description is the same, but it's at the age of 29. Elger Enders runs away from home. This running away consists of buying a building in a black ghetto in Park Slope, Brooklyn. So I think it touches on some racial stuff, obviously. And it was made in 1970. Okay. It looks like it's black and white, so it has Lee Grant in it.
All right. Olin gave us a Lee Grant connection as well. We already talked about it, but I was excited when I saw it come up because I have not actually seen it, and that's In the Heat of the Night. Sidney Poitier, Rod Steiger, Lee Grant.
Steiger.
Yeah.
I would be interested in that. In seeing it.
Yeah, I would be very interested in seeing it. Julie Christie did a movie called Don't Look Now, where she stars with Donald Sutherland, and it's about a psychological thriller set in Venice. Don't know anything about this movie except for what I just said, but I did like Julie Christie. I'd be curious to see her in something else. And then Olin's third connection is another movie centering around elections. It was just covered on another recent podcast, The Next Picture Show, and that is the 1999 comedy Election, which I actually would be really interested in revisiting as well. I really liked it the last time I saw it, but I haven't revisited it in a really long time.
I saw it about a year ago for the first time, and I loved it.
Yeah, it's really, really
good. Really well done.
If we don't end up picking that, I would recommend everybody watch Election at some point before November.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely watch it. But yeah, I don't know if I'm like that eager to see it again so soon, but I guess let's see.
I believe it was when I watched it was on Canopy.
Not sure. And we also have one more connection from Jim Crumbly.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. I think I didn't send it to you. So.
Could be what?
That would explain it. He nominates Dr. Zhivago, which also features Julie Christie.
Oh. I know nothing about Dr. Zhivago. I always assume it's like Dr. Doolittle, but I don't think that's what it's about.
Not what it's about at all.
No. Doolittle, Sidney Poitier, those are...
I always think Dr. Zhivago is Dr. Strangelove.
I always think it's Dr. Moreau.
Oh. The Isle of Dr. Moreau.
We need to watch Dr. Zhivago just so we can all clear up what Dr. Zhivago... Right. What was the connection? Julie Christie?
Yeah.
Okay. Lee Grant, her performance at the end of that movie was really good. I don't want it since we're out of spoilers, but I can see why people thought Lee Grant did a good job. Thinking back to that movie, like the stuff post-party, I feel like she does a good job.
Oh, yeah, I think she was good. I just didn't think she like stood out as like the clear like best performance in this movie, no less of like all movies that year, which obviously I haven't seen them, but
it's true. All right, so before we get into our host connections, before we started recording, we were all talking about how we might be able to predict what the others picked.
Yeah.
So I thought I had a pretty good handle on the two that Av said. He had two really strong ones. So I think the two that Av predicted, and Av, you can just tell me if I'm right or wrong, were number one, Boogie Nights.
That's right.
Nice.
And I mean, Boogie Nights is like ridiculous, but in connections to this. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then number two, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
So that's what Brendan said also before. I was going to not just because, you know, I don't want to like impose, but you know,
we would have just canceled the rest of the podcast and gone and watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Now that it's, I'm being forced to include it. Well, I'll put that as my first of my four, but you know,
I feel like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is so tied to this movie. Like,
It's like too much of a connection. Yeah. It's like the movie, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was made like in large part with like the themes and like characters of this movie in mind. So like it's almost too much.
Did Tarantino talk about this movie at all when he made it? Has he said he was like pulling from this?
I don't know if I've seen him talk about it, but it was definitely like, you know, like they'll always be on like Collider or those sites where like they'll put like, here's like 8 movies to see before you see Joker or before you see that. And Shampoo was on all of those lists.
Oh, interesting. Didn't
Next Picture Show do Shampoo combined with this when they did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
That would be interesting.
I feel like they did.
That would make sense. Yeah. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. All right. So that is my number one. You know, obviously takes place in Los Angeles during the exact same time period, I guess a year later.
A year.
We talked about Sharon Tate connection, possibly. We talked about the Brian Wilson connection between the movies. A lot of thematic connections about like the end of the 60s, yada, yada. So,
if you haven't seen it and we don't pick it, just go see it anyway. Because, I mean, it's streaming now. It's a really good movie. It's worth your time, I promise.
Where's it streaming? I think it's on Stars.
Yeah.
Okay. Stars.
Yeah. And this would be a missed opportunity because, Brendan, I believe you were supposed to come on There Will Be Pod to talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood
when we did
our regular review on it, and it just didn't work out. So.
And timing-wise, I wasn't able to make it. No. I don't remember why, but I think we should
do it during the day, and you could have only available at night.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because I work during the day, so... It was unfortunate, but I was really excited to talk about it. I had lots of notes, and then I ended up not being able to put in a voicemail for it either. I just ran out of time, so... I think I have one solid connection that Zach made, and it's just a out-of-left-field, but it's a Goldie Hawn movie that I know he loves, and it also involves a love triangle, and that's the 1990s comedy Death Becomes Her.
Ah, I do love Death Becomes Her. I didn't even actually think of that as a connection besides
Zach, I thought that was going to be one of your connections, Zach.
Death Becomes Her is so good. I should watch that.
Death Becomes Her is really good. Have you seen Death Becomes Her?
No.
Oh, man. Yeah,
that's why I didn't put it on mine.
Damn. And it's also one of the other women in Death Becomes Her is an actress who has been nominated for a ton of awards and has only won a few times, and that is Meryl Streep. Oh, man. Huh. I do not currently have Death Becomes Her on my list, and I have too many other things to talk about, so I will not be bringing up Death Becomes Her. So, sorry.
Okay. Let's stick with you and tell us what the rest of your connections are, sir.
Okay. So Zach spoiled one of them. My second one was going to be Boogie Nights. I wrote down like eight connections here. So number one is just overall milieu, just like, you know, showing the seedy underbelly of Los Angeles during a very, not the same time period. So this is the end of the 60s. That's the end of the 70s. But like both movies thematically are about marking like the end of an era in American history. Like there's a crucial scene in the middle of Boogie Nights that takes place on New Year's Eve, and something happens exactly as the clock strikes midnight and the 70s end and the 80s begin. Similarly, just to that, like just the way that like that New Year's Eve party reminded me very much of this Election Day party, kind of just like marking this like pivotal moment in American history. One of the first lines of this movie that Warren Beatty says is "I'm a star, I'm a star," which is literally the last lines of Boogie Nights Mark Wahlberg says, "I'm a star, I'm a star, I'm a big, big, bright, shining star." There's a scene in Boogie Nights where Don Cheadle goes to a bank to get a loan for his business, which exactly happens in this movie with George going to the bank to get a loan for the salon.
So you're saying PTA is a ripoff artist.
Yeah, it might. It might be. lots of drug use in both movies.
Yeah.
And both movies, not the very final scene of Boogie Nights, but I think it's like the montage that comes right before the final scene features a Beach Boys song, much like the beginning and end of Shampoo feature a Beach Boys song.
I feel like this movie is way more like a lot of directors must love this movie, right? The writers, directors, that can't all be a coincidence that there's that many connections to Boogie Nights. So PTA must have been a big fan of Shampoo.
I think this is one of those movies that spawned a lot of ideas for sure and connections. It is very easy to
very influential.
Very influential.
So. All right, that's my number two. My number three is another one of my all-time favorite movies that takes place on a single night It's marks the end of an era for the people in the movie, not necessarily for the country in the same way. Mm-hmm. Music plays a very big role, a very famous soundtrack, lots of drug use. And the line that Zach mentioned earlier with the, am I right? If you could imagine Matthew McConaughey saying, am I right? Am I right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Dazed and confused. I typed it out before you even said it.
As you started talking about this movie, I actually thought you were going to list one of my connections, but you did not.
Yeah.
Right. Looking forward to hearing that then. Okay. And then my last one. This is a movie I have not seen. So the extent to which I can make connections is solely based off of the IMDb description and like who's in it and stuff like that. Mm. So Julie Christie appears in this movie. I don't know if she's an actor. It says she plays herself. So I really don't know much about this movie. I'll just say that the movie is Nashville, the 1975 Robert. Yeah. I think it's considered his most important or best movie. The plot description is that it takes place over a 5-day period leading up to a gala concert for a candidate for president. So that seems kind of on point. Ronnie Barkley and Lily Tomlin were both nominated for Best Supporting Actress in the same year as that Lee Grant won. Mm. And that's it. But all four of my movies, I would say, fit the description of slice of life movies with an ensemble cast in which music plays a very important role, music and soundtrack, and there's lots of drug use. So,
absolutely.
Look at you. That's probably your best connection set that you've done.
Guys, I told you earlier, don't bother. I was very excited about my connections for this.
I also will say this, at least your first three is like three of your Mount Rushmore directors. Linklater, Quentin Tarantino, and PTA, I would say, are your three or four Mount Rushmore.
All in like my top five or six, yeah. I might put Scorsese ahead of Linklater, but yeah, that's like my top five is probably those five people, and Spielberg.
All right.
I love Nashville. I saw it for the first time last year. I would love to revisit it. It's an incredibly good film.
So I've never seen it also. All I know about it is it has a giant cast, and it's like... I can't try to watch that one on Tuesday afternoon because I think it's a little bit longer. So
it is a little longer. I know our buddy Matt Johnson would be really excited if we chose Nashville.
I would watch any of Ob's movies. Your first,
I would say
two.
All four of my movies, I would say, are also like very tied to like a specific place in America.
Absolutely.
The setting is a very big part of the movie.
What year does Nashville take place? I know you said presidential politics.
I know it came out in 1975.
Yeah, I believe it's still set in the 70s as well because it's the post-hippie era. Involves folk singers and it's set in the mid-70s.
All right, cool.
I will go next.
Go for it.
Unless you want to go next, Brendan.
Yours are probably stronger than mine, but yeah, you can go next.
Nashville also has Ned Beatty in it, who I think is not related to Warren Beatty, but they have the same.
Oh, I always assumed they were related.
I don't believe they're related.
No. All right. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4. Five.
I believe Warren Beatty is a stage name. Sorry.
I have six. Written down.
Oh,
I didn't realize that either. Is it Beatty or Beatty? I always thought it was Beatty.
I think it's Beatty. I keep saying it wrong. I also keep saying Marilyn Manson, so don't go based on me.
Maybe I'm thinking of his sister. Either he uses a stage name or his sister does, but he has a famous sister. Sorry, I'm completely derailing this conversation.
That's all right.
I'll look it up. You go.
All right. Let's see what we've got. So I have, like I said, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 movies written down, so I'm going to eliminate a couple. Death Becomes Her, I'm eliminating just because I didn't really think of that, and that would have been a good connection. I also looked at 1968 movies to see, just because that's when this movie takes place. The one that came to mind, and I'm not exactly sure, I think just because of the Republican Party, I wrote down Night of the Living Dead from 1968, but none of us have seen it, actually. That's the thing. Letterboxd tells me when you guys have seen them, and usually for Ob, that Ob didn't like the movie. So sometimes that influences if I pick it. There were a couple I wanted to pick. So I'm not going to pick Night of the Living Dead, but maybe someday in the future. We also talked last week about Bullworth, and that was written and directed by Warren Beatty. And it also stars Jack Warren as well.
And it's about an election, right? Or a candidate.
Yeah, and it's about an election. And it has a soundtrack that has some famous songs. So I actually am going to leave Bullworth on my list because I think it's got a lot of strong connections.
I never seen it.
Yeah, I think none of us had seen it, and we almost picked it last week. The next one This might be a little bit of a controversial pick because it is a Woody Allen movie, but this movie had the most Woody Allen feel of any movie that we have talked about. And so I was looking through Woody Allen movies that might fit, and there's one that also has Carrie Fisher in it, and that is Hannah and Her Sisters from 1986. It is between two Thanksgivings. Hannah's husband falls in love with her sister, Lee, while a hypochondriac ex-husband rekindles his relationship with her sister, Holly.
No, so another love family. Yeah, I saw. I like Hannah and Her Sisters. I'm a big Woody Allen fan. I'm not a fan of the raping person. The child, but yeah, the movies. I think his movies. I think are very good.
This has like quite the cast as well. I'm just like looking through the people that are in this, and it's like Nashville levels of the cast. So Hannah and Her Sisters is the second one. I also wrote down one that I'd never heard of. I was just scrolling through Goldie Hawn's Letterboxd page, and there is a movie called Dollar Sign. It is the Dollar Sign. It is from 1971, and I wasn't going to suggest it, but it has Warren Beatty and Goldie Hawn in it, and it is about a bank security expert plots with a call girl to rob the safety deposit box of three very different criminals from a high-tech bank in Hamburg. So I know nothing about it. I don't know anybody who's watched it, according to Letterboxd, but I will put Dollar Sign on there. And the last one is a toss-up between Easy Rider because of the motorcycle riding time period, or Can't Hardly Wait, which is a big party that all takes place in one day. It also stars the kid from Dick Tracy. I think I'm going to go with Can't Hardly Wait, just because I think that would be fun to watch.
That was suggested last week, too, I believe, so that's great.
Yeah, and when Av was talking about Dazed and Confused, I thought he was describing Can't Hardly Wait. So
great. So Warren Beatty's name is Warren Beatty, but his sister is Shirley MacLaine, who we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And I always forget that because they have complete Shirley MacLaine is a stage name. So yeah, they are brother and sister, but they have
Shirley. It says he was born Shirley MacLaine Beatty, but. Spelled the MacLaine is spelled differently, so I guess
so she only goes by Shirley MacLaine,
right? But not spelled the way that her middle name. I guess MacLaine was probably like her mom's maiden name,
something like that. Probably
people probably do that. I doubt they named her MacLaine as her middle name.
McLovin,
John McLean, John McLovin.
The other is why I didn't pick Easy Rider.
She was named after Shirley Temple.
Got it.
The other is why
it also spelled differently.
Yeah, her mom's maiden name was MacLaine. Yeah.
Yeah.
The spelling. Very weird.
I'm cursed. Okay, never mind.
Go ahead. Go.
Stop. Oh, I was gonna say it's not even weird. It's one of those, you know how when you're in a conversation, you keep trying to say something, and somebody's like, "What?" And then you say it again, and like they ask you three times, you're like, "Yeah, never mind. It wasn't worth saying." All I was gonna say is that I saw Av didn't like Easy Rider, so that's also a reason not to pick Easy Rider.
Yeah, I was very bored by Easy Rider. Yeah, I know it's supposed to. I know it's supposed to be like a really important film, but I watched it like last year while I was doing my 60s catch up, and it's just like they just drive around the motorcycles the whole time. It's they do cocaine a bunch,
so we will not be watching Easy Rider. Okay,
right. So since both of you nominated four, I'm also gonna nominate four. I'm gonna take one that I initially crossed off and put it back on my list, but a couple that were on my list as I was watching that I crossed off. There's a famous story about how if you ever watch Casino on cable, they always replace the word F-U-C-K with shampoo. So Robert De Niro was constantly saying, "Did you shampoo my wife?"
Really?
So I was going to use that. And then I realized that that was just a stupid connection and a stupid joke. So I crossed that off. I was also going to use Grease because of the Beauty School Dropout. I thought about The Ides of March, the George Clooney, Ryan Gosling.
Oh, I really liked that when I saw it.
Yeah. I also thought about Death Becomes Her, but crossed it off because I thought Zach would use it. So the four movies I am going with. So a famous movie involving a love triangle that came out recently, Love Actually.
Sort of.
Or
recently.
The Love Triangle.
20 years ago,
I know nothing about it. I've never seen it. I only know the meme. With the guy from The Walking Dead.
Oh, that guy's from The Walking Dead?
Yeah, so, that's the only thing I know about it. But yeah, that's I know apparently there are several love triangles, and there are several love triangles in this movie. Speaking of love, my second pick is Love and Mercy, the Brian Wilson story, which is a movie starring John Cusack. I have never seen it. I've wanted to see it. I put it on Brian. The connection is that some of it takes place in the late 1960s. Brian Wilson did some of the music for Shampoo, so he's my connection. And then speaking of people who did the music for this movie, Paul Simon and Simon and Garfunkel are prominently featured in this, and also are prominent in another movie that features a love triangle, and that's The Graduate, starring Dustin Hoffman. That is my third connection. And then a movie that takes place in 1968, all in one night, surrounding an election, also takes place in LA, is the movie Bobby, about the 1968 Democratic primary in Los Angeles, in which Bobby Kennedy is assassinated in the lobby of the hotel after giving his victory speech.
Man, look at us bringing four each. Everything's getting bigger around here. But we had fewer listener connections this week, I think so.
Yeah, I figure before we go to the 20th episode, we need something big for our 20th.
Everything's getting bigger other than our listener base.
I know, right?
Hey, you never know. After my performance last night on RHAP Patron Trivia, we should be packed to the gills with new listeners, I would think. All right, just to recap what we had, we have How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Almost Famous, Run Silent, Run Deep, Brian's Song, The Landlord, In the Heat of the Night, Don't Look Now, Election, Dr. Zhivago, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Boogie Nights, Dazed and Confused, Nashville, Bulworth, Hannah and Her Sisters, Can't Hardly Wait, Love Actually, Love and Mercy, The Graduate, and Bobby. Of course, we always add all of these movies to our Letterboxd watch list, which keeps growing. So if you were looking for something to watch and you're trying to remember what we talked about, check out that watch list if you look at our Letterboxd page at Ladder Movie on Letterboxd. All right, now we are each going to pick three movies to move forward. Although we could do the six movie thing this time since we have more.
Let's each pick two. Why not?
We each pick two. We are all going to rank them individually. And then we will reveal our top three, and we will pick whichever had the highest overall rating will be what we will be watching.
Perfect.
So, all right. So, Brennan, you go first.
Awesome. I am going to take a movie I've seen and a movie I haven't. Going to take In the Heat of the Night and give me Nashville. Because I think Nashville would be really fun to rewatch.
All right. Brennan picks In the Heat of the Night and Nashville. So I will pick two that were not my own that have not already been picked. I will pick Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Boogie Nights.
All right. Wow. And I, as well, will pick one that I saw and one that I have not seen. Almost Famous. I probably should have done that, but oh well. Almost Famous and Bulworth.
Nice. All right, so the top six. This is the Jeff strategy of picking movies.
Oh my God, I would watch every single one of these movies tonight.
Yeah, so we have six movies now. So we're each going to pick our top three and go from there, I guess, to see what has the highest cumulative score. Maybe we should rank our top six just in case there are ties. All right, so we're each going to take like 10 seconds to assign a top six. I don't know where to do it. It's not in this Google Doc, so you can't see it. All right.
It's tough because there's only one on here that I haven't actually seen. But I also haven't seen.
All right, I have mine.
I got mine. I mean, this is kind of like, I just put the ones that I suggested.
Because I suggested them.
So, like, obviously.
Three favorite ones are all ones that you suggested. So.
All right. So what's everybody's number three? We'll see if we can figure this out.
My number three is Boogie Nights.
Same.
My number two is Boogie Nights. So
what's your number three?
Oh, yeah. I guess you need to know my number three. My number three is In the Heat of the Night.
Okay. Your number two is Boogie Nights. My number two is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
Brennan, what's your number two?
In the Heat of the Night.
Oh, mine is Boogie Nights is my number two. All right, and number one,
mine is
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Nashville.
Ooh, all right, this is tough now. So Nashville was gonna be my fifth. So that's a six so points.
So let's just call a spade a spade. The three that are in discussion are all from my list. So when I told you guys earlier, don't waste any time.
Okay.
Because it's already determined.
All right.
You should just listen to me.
All right. So we have to do a little math here. So we have two first place finishes and a fifth place finish for Nashville. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was my number one and your guys' number twos. Is that correct?
In the Heat of the Night was my number two.
Brendan didn't have it in his three.
I didn't have it in my three.
Where did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood land in your list?
Me? Four.
Oh, okay.
So four. One, two, and four. So that's exactly the same as Nashville. That adds up to seven.
And then Boogie Nights was a three, a two, and a three.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's out.
But it did make all three of our top threes.
So. Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with any of these three. All
right. We're going to flip a coin again. Between Nashville and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, since they had the same score.
Okay. Fine. I'm fine with that.
All right.
I'm good with both. Because we can also still go with either one afterwards. So.
Is it safe or unsafe? That's what,
that's the question.
Right. So I haven't looked at it yet. I have it in my hand. Let's go heads, Nashville. Tails, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
All right. Sure.
It is. That's tails. So we're
can't even reach your own coin.
Yeah. So Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is what we're watching next week.
The movie we forced Av to put back on his list.
Honestly, though, Av's like favorite movie ever, and a movie I didn't like that much.
Watching it, and
it's fitting for our 20th episode. It's
kismet that I finally get to talk with Av about it. It's a recent movie, so I think our listeners will be excited. This excites me for our 20th episode. I think this is the right call.
And there's a lot of good directions to go just because of all the people in it.
Absolutely.
I didn't like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when I saw it. I am excited to revisit it because I would imagine I'll like it more the second time, but who knows?
Yeah, and I mean, it'll be good to have someone to calm me and Av down, you know, who might not be as high on the movie as we are, so.
Yeah, it's also you know, our most recent movie we were going to cover.
Yeah, absolutely.
This actually came up on the WhatsApp group that Av and I are in. Somebody asked about suggesting new releases, and we said, sure, if they fit. Because they were saying they would have suggested Capone as a connection to Dick Tracy last week. But it's probably good that we're not watching Capone based on
And it's not streaming yet, right? So
I think it came out like this week or it's coming out this weekend. But it sounds like, by all accounts, it's pretty terrible.
Basically. Oh man! So we keep a tally every week of points based on how each of us does, how often our movies get picked. If you share a connection with somebody, which we don't really do the shared connections anymore, because usually if it's on somebody else's list, we just don't do it. But Av is now leading; he took a half point lead over me. Av has had 6.5 movies chosen, and I have had 6 movies chosen. Brendan has had 4 movies chosen, and the listeners have had 3.5 movies chosen. So
indeed.
Cool. Good job, Av. Congratulations on all of your successes. I think we should book a little extra time for next week's podcast because I feel like it's gonna go longer than
I might have.
Especially if we're gonna do the
top 10
recap. Yeah, the top 10 recap.
We'll run through our top 10 probably pretty quickly. I don't think we need to We'll see. There's not a lot to say about that, as we'd like to say on this podcast. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I believe Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has already been suggested as well.
It has a couple of times.
Let's see. Once Upon a Time. Let's see. I'll just do this real quick while we're wrapping up.
As the first movie we did.
So it was suggested after Collateral, it looks like. It was suggested after My Cousin Vinny. Just on a Google Docs search. It was suggested on Fargo. I have all these trivia things that I. It's hard. Yeah. All right. So it's been suggested. It's coming up after Shutter Island, Groundhog Day. Okay. This must not be right because.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
No.
Yeah. No. It doesn't.
We'll listen back to all the episodes before and find out where it came up.
All right. So
point is, get ready.
Yeah, get ready. Next week, for our 20th episode, we were talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It is streaming on Stars. Is that the only place?
And then you can rent it. I mean, you can rent it on Amazon Prime, or you can watch it on Stars. Amazon Prime will prompt you to get a Stars subscription anyway. So the Stars subscription is worth it for the 7-day free trial if you haven't already done it. So.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
Let's see. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. All right, it's not coming. Okay, never mind. I'm sure we talked about it on other podcasts, though.
So. I'm sure we did.
Oh, another connection I just sort of thought of. Lee Grant's Best Supporting Actress, Brad Pitt, Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Boom.
So, yeah, and I'm Oscar. Sure we'll have even more connections once we talk about this movie. So join us next week.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think for the connections in the episode description, we're just going to write all the connections because there's so many.
Yeah.
So, right.
And yeah, join us to talk about it. All right, let's wrap this up. I'm losing my train of thought. Av, what are you doing these days?
I will hopefully be recording later tonight the next episode, season 2, episode 5, The Thong of Curb Your Enthusiasm with Alex Chester. Pretty good. Yes. A Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. And moving right along in my Survivor binge. That is basically all I've been doing. I am currently in the middle of season 27, Blood versus Water.
Fantastic. Oh, that's a good season. That is a good season. I like that one.
Which means you get Kageyan next.
I saw that already. I'm not going quite in order. Okay. Yeah, I'm jumping around a little.
Cool. Well, the Survivor finale is tomorrow. Cool.
Yeah, that's exciting.
It's my first live Survivor finale.
Oh, it's going to be a
lot of fun. Yeah. Who's your winner pick?
I mean, you have to assume Tony, you know, at this point, you know, barring something crazy, he definitely has to be the favorite, but... I don't know enough really to predict. I would say Ben is probably a lock to be in the final three because probably everyone is happy to have him there because he can't win.
I agree with that.
Right. And because apparently he's very good at the fire thing, which I'm told is a thing because I haven't seen a season yet where this happens. But whatever, that's what it sounds like. But yeah, I guess I think Tony has to be the favorite.
I picked Tyson preseason, and so I have like a fantasy league. So in my fantasy league, I went all in on Tyson coming back and winning to get all my bonus points. So hopefully. Hopefully that happens. And Brennan, what about you?
Doing anything? So as you said, we just watched Avengers this weekend. The post-show recaps, everything is super podcast rolls on into the Avengers this week. That podcast is going to drop into people's feeds on Thursday. We're really excited about it. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about, as well as some other... fun and games over at Postal Recaps that are going to pop up throughout the week. I personally don't have too much going on. Excited to take a quick vacation in a couple weeks and break quarantine just to go down to South Carolina and hang out at my mother's house instead of in my basement.
Whoa.
But, look at you. Yeah, and so I'm supposed to be in Hawaii, and instead of going to Hawaii, I'm just going to go home to South Carolina because I can't obviously go to Hawaii. But I don't want that United credit to go to waste. So,
Brennan's got a big birthday coming up that week.
Yeah, that's also true. Let's not talk about that.
30?
if only.
If only. 40 is 50? The new 30.
50, okay, 40, 30. Good. It's 40.
Yeah.
Okay.
40 is the new 30.
We get to start saying OK Boomer to Brendan in a couple weeks.
I don't know. I don't think that's how Boomer works.
I think that's how it works, man. Sure.
I am... watching Bond movies again, so maybe I'll do a Bond podcast sometime.
Nice, yeah, you should.
And probably not anytime before the next podcast, though. You can catch me over on Robbins of Podcasts Patron Trivia every Monday night, if you're a patron of that. And, of course, on this podcast. I don't know if we even plugged our Twitter handles, but you guys probably all know. Ob's Ace Sinensky. Brendan is BrenFitz11 or Fitzy Brendan, depending on your platform. And I am Brooks Z.A. And the Movie Ladder is at Ladder Movie on Letterboxd and Twitter. You can also email us themovieladder@gmail.com. So we want to hear from you. What do you think is going to be the top rated movie next week in our top 10 without cheating? And also, what are your connections off of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which has all the connections to Shampoo?
So
anything else you guys want to say before we close this thing out?
Nope.
All right.
Thanks for listening and take care.
Good night, guys.
Am I right or am I right?
Right.
to blame now.